Good evening. We're obviously continuing our reading through the Sermon on the Mount. Those verses that were just read will be the ones that we consider tonight. So as we've been doing, let's just quickly remind ourselves of where we are in this Sermon of Jesus. We've talked about the disciples' identity. They are all these things, and that these people are the salt and the light of the world or the earth. From there we go to Jesus' identity. He's one who's come to fulfill the law, not destroy the law. And that being the case, he has a high regard for the Word of God, for God's commandments. And so since he treats God's Word that way, that ought to be the way that we treat God's Word. And so that then leads into where we are in the Sermon on the Mount. That if we treat God's commandments seriously, realizing that the one we follow came to fulfill the law, we treat them seriously as well, then we should be people of greater righteousness. So that's what we're talking about, where we are in the Sermon on the Mount. And there are six of these. Tonight we'll be on number four. So we've done three so far. First, we talked about murder, that it's not enough to just not murder, that instead we need to actively be working towards being reconciled. The second one was about the commandment to not commit adultery. And it's not enough just not to commit adultery. We have to think about where our hearts are. Are we lusting? Are we coveting? Last week we talked about divorce, or put in positive terms, marriage, what it looks like to have greater righteousness in marriage, that it's seen as a covenant, a permanent union and a permanent covenant between two people. And so this evening we move into the fourth of these six areas of greater righteousness, and we're going to be talking about oaths or honesty. And so that's what we'll be looking at tonight. It seems quite probable that we have two groups of three within this grouping of six. If you go back and look at how each of these begin, in verse 21, it says, "You have heard that it was said to those of old," and I realize, kind of looking at the screen, it kind of looks like it could say, "You've heard that it was said to those of old, murder." But no, that's not what was said to those of old. And so that's how it starts out, how this section starts out. 27 says, "You've heard that it was said," it's about adultery. 31 says, "It was also said," and it's about divorce. You get into number 4 in verse 33, and he says, again, "You've heard that it was said to those of old." It's kind of like he repeats what was said in verse 21 that got all of this going. So there's the word again, and then the repetition of verse 21. Almost as though Jesus is saying, again, let's look at three more of these. We've looked at three. Again, you've heard it was said to those of old. Let's look at three more areas. And then it goes on to say, "You've heard that it was said," and "You've heard that it was said." And we'll look at those two in coming weeks. So tonight, we're in number four of the six areas of greater righteousness. And that's in the area of oaths or of honesty. And so what does it look like to have greater righteousness in our honesty, in our word? For Jesus' disciples, greater righteousness than the scribes and Pharisees. But for us in our lives, just greater righteousness in being honest people. And that's what these words are going to, or what these verses are going to deal with. So we get started in verse 33. Again, let me give you some more areas, Jesus says. Again, you've heard that it was said to those of old, "You shall not swear falsely, but shall perform to the Lord what you have sworn." So let's look at some of the Old Testament passages that might be in view with this. With each of these, how it gets going is some reference to something that people would have been familiar with in the Old Testament. So he begins by saying, "You've heard it was said to those of old, you shall not swear falsely." Leviticus 19 and verse 12 is probably a verse that's in view here. You shall not swear by my name falsely, and so profane the name of your God. I am the Lord. And we'll come back to this verse again in a minute. It says, you shall not swear by my name falsely. The second part states it in positive terms. So the first part says, don't do this. And the second part says, but do this. But shall perform to the Lord what you have sworn. And there's a few different Old Testament texts that talk about performing what has been vowed to the Lord. Psalm 50 and verse 14, offer to God a sacrifice of thanksgiving and perform your vows to the Most High. Deuteronomy 23, we'll look at 21 and 23. If you make a vow to the Lord your God, you shall not delay fulfilling it. For the Lord your God will surely require it of you, and you will be guilty of sin. You shall be careful to do what has passed your lips, for you have voluntarily vowed to the Lord your God what you have promised with your mouth. And then also Numbers 30 and verse 2. If a man vows a vow to the Lord, or swears an oath to bind himself by a pledge, he shall not break his word. He shall do according to all that proceeds out of his mouth. So you shall not swear falsely, but shall perform to the Lord what you have sworn. And these are some of the scriptures that probably would have been used to say something like that. If you go back to Leviticus 19:12, look at the idea of the name. Swearing by my name, the name of your God. So there's this idea of the name that we'll talk about tonight as we go through this. And if you look at that verse in Leviticus and then think about one of the commandments that's given in Exodus 20, you shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain. For the Lord will not hold him guiltless who takes his name in vain. And in our times, our application of this commandment tends to be not to use God's name flippantly or as a curse word kind of a thing. In an ancient, the ancient Near Eastern world, the world of sacrifices, and it's probably not as much about don't say, oh my, in a flippant way. Part of this is the idea of oaths and invoking the name of the deity and all those sorts of things. And so we'll talk a little bit about that as we go through. So what is an oath? If we're talking about oaths and swearing, and when we think about swear, we usually use that to swear as like a cuss word, a bad word. But what are we talking about when we talk about an oath or swearing by something? Well, there's a few quotes that are pretty close to the time of Jesus that talk about oaths and what it means to take an oath. And so these were some that I came across this week, both Jewish and non-Jewish. So this was a cultural thing. This comes from Cicero, who's a Roman philosopher in the first century. He says, an oath is an assurance backed by religious sanctity and a solemn promise given as before God, as one's witness, to be sacredly kept. So you might say, with God as my witness, I am telling the truth. And if you look at some of the letters of Paul, he uses some similar language to that at times. So it's the idea of, invoking the name of God to sort of lend credibility to what it is you're saying. Like being in a court and calling God as your witness to say you're telling the truth. Another one, a little bit earlier, I'm not going to try to pronounce this name. And I couldn't find any pictures of him either, so maybe he was kind of camera shy. I don't know. But it says, an oath is an unproved statement supported by an appeal to the gods. So if you're saying something and you don't really have any proof that what you're saying is true, well, you would say, by, if you're in the part of the Greek gods and that's your worship, by so-and-so, by this god, in the name of fill in the blank, I'm telling you the truth. There's nothing to prove you're telling the truth, so you invoke a higher power, is the idea. Philo, who's contemporary with the early church, says, for an oath is nothing else than to call God to bear witness in a disputed matter. So again, it's this idea, you've got something being said, one person says this, somebody else says this, and somebody says, well, in the name of God, I tell the truth, that sort of a thing. So this is the situation. That's the idea of oaths and swearing by something, and we'll talk about that as we go through. But you have this idea of taking an oath in both Jewish and non-Jewish culture. So taking an oath, invoking the name of the God, to then say that you're telling the truth. And you wouldn't say something false in the presence of the God. Well, Jesus then says, but I say to you. So there's something wrong about how they're taking their oaths and what they're swearing by. He says, but I say to you, do not take an oath at all. And we'll talk about how all-encompassing that might be. Either by heaven, for it is the throne of God, or by the earth, for it is his footstool, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. And do not take an oath by your head, for you cannot make one hair white or black. So what is Jesus talking about here? What's the sort of cultural situation or Jewish interpretations that give rise to what he's saying? Well, we in our times have a tradition or a custom of the fingers crossed behind the back. What does that mean? I don't know if anybody actually does this or not. Maybe there's somebody out there who does this. But the idea is that if you enter into some sort of an agreement, but you've got your fingers crossed behind your back, well, then that makes your agreement null and void, and you don't have to keep your word, you don't have to keep your oath, because you've done something to find the loophole in the system. You've kind of found the loophole, you've cheated the system. And I did a little bit of looking into that to try to find out where that comes from. And it seems to be the origin of crossing the fingers was a Catholic practice. And if you think about, cross the fingers, well, what you're doing is you're making a cross. And so to cross the fingers, you would see the cross in front of you, and it was the idea that this would protect you from wrongdoing. If you got into a difficult situation, you look at the cross, and it protects you from evil, from persecution, protects you from the wrong that others are maybe doing to you. It protects you from wrongdoing. My assumption would then be that what happens is people have the idea that you can protect yourself from your own wrongdoing by appealing to the cross. So that could be where it comes from. But whatever the case is, this is pretty much what the Jewish people were doing. They didn't put a cross behind their back, but they had another system whereby they could kind of find the loophole and get out of something they said that they were going to do. In the time of Jesus, there was a lot of oral traditions, oral interpretations of the law and of the Old Testament. Those come to be written down not too long after the time of Jesus, maybe some of them during the time of Jesus, but it's referred to as the Mishnah. If you've ever heard of that or read anything that talks about the Mishnah, it's the oral traditions, the interpretations of the law. And we're not going to go through all of this. I'm by no means any sort of an expert in it. But there were different topics that they would look at. And within that, you had lots of different writings that attempt to interpret different pieces of the law, or sort of say, we might think about it sort of like a commentary almost. I mean, we read through Leviticus, and that's pretty hard. It was hard for people in those times too, I'd suggest. And so they had lots of different ways of interpreting it, lots of different oral traditions. And what Jesus is doing, specifically in these verses, but on many occasions, is it's sort of like he's going over to the bookshelf, or not that there's literally a bookshelf there, and pulling off something that they all knew, pulling off a book or an oral teaching, and opening it up and saying, well, this is what all of you are doing, but this isn't right. And he's calling out the errors of his time. And there's a few particular books or writings that he's referring to when he talks about their swearing practices. So he says, don't take an oath at all by heaven or by earth. Well, one of their traditions was that if you swore by the heavens or if you swore by the earth, that's kind of like putting the cross behind your back. And now I don't have to do what I've said. So one of these says, if a man said, I adjure you, or I command you, or I bind you, they are liable. But if he said, by heaven and earth, they are exempt. And so why can you not swear by heaven and then get out of that oath? Jesus says, because heaven is the throne of God. If you've sworn by heaven, you've sworn by the throne of God. And you need to keep what you've said you'll do. Well, if you swear by the earth, why is it that you can't get out of that? Well, if you've sworn by the earth is his footstool. And so you've got to follow through with that. He says, or by Jerusalem. And there's another one of these writings. And I know that these things aren't familiar to us. They're not familiar to me really either. I just saw some of the citations. But this is out of the Mishnah. This is the oral traditions that get written down. If he says, may it be by Jerusalem, he has said not. And so if a person swears by Jerusalem, why can't they get out of that oath? Well, Jesus says, because that's the city of the great king. You've got to keep that one too. Or if you swear by your head. This is another one of the traditions. If you swear by your head, that's like putting the cross behind your back. And now you can get out of what you said. Another one of these says, if a man take an oath before his fellow, and his fellow said to him, vow to me by the life of your head, Rabbi Meir, and this was some rabbi that they appealed to that was like the top dog rabbi, Rabbi Meir says, if you swear by the life of your head, then you can get out of your oath. Well, Jesus says, if you swear by your head, you still have to keep that oath because God created your head, basically. And God is, he can make your hair white, he can make your hair black. He's responsible for that. He doesn't say who's responsible if your hair falls out. But he says he can make one hair white or one hair black. And so if you swear by your head, you've got to keep that too. And so there's questions about what Jesus means by don't take an oath at all. You know, how far that's going. Some people take this to mean that no oath about anything, not in a court of law, not on the work site, not anything. I think more probable is the idea that Jesus is saying, if you're going to do it this way, like what the people around you are doing it, don't take those sort of oaths. Don't take the oath with the fingers crossed behind the back kind of a thing. Because we do see Paul using oath-like language in other places. There's times where God uses oath-like language, I swear by myself kind of a thing. And so we have oath-type language in the New Testament. So I don't know it's that you can never take an oath at all about anything. It may be if this is how you're going to take your oaths, don't engage in this sort of thing. Just for the sake of being thorough, Matthew 23 is a similar scripture where he says in Matthew 23 in verse 16, "Woe to you, blind guides, who say, if anyone swears by the temple, it is nothing." And they had writings that said, if you swear by the temple, you can get out of that one. But if anyone swears by the gold of the temple, he's bound by his oath. "You blind fools, for which is greater, the gold or the temple that has made the gold sacred? And you say, if anyone swears by the altar, it is nothing. But if anyone swears by the gift that is on the altar, he is bound by his oath. You blind men, for which is greater, the gift or the altar that makes the gift sacred? So whoever swears by the altar swears by it and by everything on it. And whoever swears by the temple swears by it and by him who dwells in it. And whoever swears by heaven swears by the throne of God and by him who sits upon it." So we get even a further idea of oaths and swearing on objects and all of that in this reading. So they had this practice of swearing on objects. "I swear by the temple. I swear by the altar." And then you have now taken an oath by swearing on that object. "I swear by Jerusalem. I swear by the heavens. I swear by the earth. I swear by my head. I swear by..." So this was the thing that was... This was kind of like the thing to do, I guess. You swear on these objects and you enter into an oath by swearing on the object. So how does all this get started? And this all seems pretty silly, right? To swear by my head, I swear by the earth, I swear by the temple, but not the... All that seems pretty silly. So how does all this get going and all of that? Well, it seems to be that they understood to invoke the name of God is very serious. If I take an oath and I mention God in that oath, I invoke the name of God, I say, "With God as my witness," something like that. Well, you've entered into a serious situation. And they realize that. They realize that to call upon the name of God in an oath was very serious. So much so that it seems they started swearing by some other things. Because they knew, if I swear by the name of God, I've got to do this. So instead of swearing by the name of God, they started swearing by objects. Some of which were considered holy objects. So it's kind of like swearing by God, maybe. You swear by the temple or by the altar or by Jerusalem. And so it's kind of a holy sort of a vow. But I didn't swear by the name of God. And if I didn't swear by the name of God, then maybe I can get out of that. Maybe I can get out of that oath. Because I didn't swear by God, I swore by the temple. I swore by the altar. And so they kind of create this loophole or this wiggle room by not swearing on the name of God, but swearing by objects that had some sort of holy association to them. And so that's what Jesus is talking about here, is somebody who says, "I swear by the temple." And then they want to retract that and they can say, "Well, I didn't really swear by the name of God. I swore by the temple, which is where God resides, but I didn't really swear by the name of God. I swore by the temple, and they can kind of start backpedaling and get out of their word, get out of their oath. And so what does Jesus say to that? To that, Jesus says, let what you say be simply yes or no. That's all you have to say. You don't have to have some elaborate swearing system and oaths. And you've got a yes and you've got a no. Let what you say be simply yes or no. Anything more than this comes from evil, or the evil one, your translation may read. In the book of James, we have something that's very similar. James chapter 5 and verse 12. But above all, my brothers, do not swear, either by heaven or by earth or by any other oath, but let your yes be yes and your no be no, so that you may not fall under condemnation. And again, we have this idea of simplicity. All you have to say is yes or no. You don't have to swear by this and swear by that and have this whole convoluted system. You can say yes or you can say no. And so if these verses are calling us to greater righteousness in our honesty, what in our lives might we need to change so that we can have greater righteousness in our honesty? We might not be people, and I don't think that we are, who would say, I swear by the Lord's Supper table. I swear by the songbook or the Bible or whatever thing we want to. I don't think any of us go throughout our week doing that. At least, I don't think that we do. But are there any other things that we do, or any other sort of situations that we get ourselves into and we say, well, I didn't really say this, or I didn't really mean that, and do we try to twist things sometimes? Do we try to find some way of getting out of something? Or do we try to put the cross behind the back? Not that we literally do that, but do we do that in our minds in ways? And for us, I think that's what these verses are speaking to. What might we need to change in our lives to be people of greater righteousness in our honesty? So let's think about that as we go through our week. To be people who our integrity is such that if we say yes, everybody knows that means yes. And if we say no, everybody means that means no. So what can we do to be people of yes or no? It's really pretty simple. And I think Jesus intends for that to be simple. Either say yes or no and be a person who is such that when you say yes, everybody knows you mean yes. And if you say no, then everybody knows that you mean no. If you're here this evening and there is anything that we can do for you, as we all strive to be people of honesty and integrity, if there's anything that we can do to help you with that, or if there should be anybody here who needs even to be baptized tonight, we can help you in any way possible. So please come forward as we stand and sing.